This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Place to Be Nation, welcome back to another great episode in our Pop Goes the Classics series on the Disney animated films. I am Andy Afton, one of your co-hosts, and joining me is one of the other co-hosts tonight, Miss Miranda Berthold. Miranda, how are you tonight, my dear?
I'm okay.
Yeah, do you have your lucky feather? You ready to go?
I'm ready to go. Lucky feather and all.
All right. The third member of our team is actually unavailable for this episode. So shout out to Mr. Chad Campbell. Hopefully we'll see you on the next episode with Bambi. But tonight, we're talking about 1941's Dumbo. Classic movie. A lot of people love it. Very few people don't like it. It's got a lot of heart to it, a lot of trippiness to it, so to speak. And basically, the plot summary is really simple. Ridiculed because of his enormous ears, a young circus elephant is assisted by a mouse to achieve his full potential. It was directed by Samuel Armstrong and Norman Ferguson, starring Sterling Holloway, Edward Brophy, Herman Bing, and many other voice cast. So, Dumbo comes in at actually probably the shortest at 64 minutes of all the...
I think it is the shortest. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's really quick. So in doing some research, I found out that this was made very quickly, like within like a year and a half, which for that time is for now too, sometimes for some anime. And it was made with a modest budget compared to like... I think it was made for like $1.5 million when some of the other movies were making... It cost like $3 to $4 million. Now, this is 1941, also get you. So you can imagine if you adjust for inflation, what it really is.
Well, it was due to the war efforts that they asked them to do that. Like, they actually asked them to keep the production cheap because, you know, during that time we were trying to spend money, cut costs where we could. Everybody was pitching in. You know, it really was due to the war at the time.
Yeah, and they were looking to recoup some of the financial losses from Fantasia, which didn't get the critical success. As we talked about in our last episode, people were like, I mean, after Snow White and Pinocchio, I don't know if people really were asking for Fantasia. I mean, it's a great movie. Don't get me wrong. I mean, at the time as well, it was
fantastic.
Yeah, but people I think just wanted a full length cartoon. You know, I mean, this is, you know, of course, coming up in some of our next episodes, we will have some live action mixed with, but I think Fantasia was just, I don't know if people really were ready for it yet, you know, and I think people just wanted to a feel good story, and Fantasia is not really what that is.
Yeah, no, it was cute for what it was, and it's actually one of my favorites. But I don't. Maybe if it had come in a different time in the lineup that we're going through here, like maybe it was wrong time.
Yeah.
Because you know you did. We talked about it then, but like it had a bigger boom in the 90s when they remastered it and stuff. So. Maybe just wrong time.
Yeah, I think I'm actually going to probably speak more highly of Fantasia 2000 when we get to it than the original Fantasia, I think, because I adore that movie. I really do. So, talking about Dumbo, though. So, you know, as we rewatch these movies, it hadn't been that long since I had seen Dumbo, so it was relatively fresh. But, you know, you had the classic circus music over the opening, and the kind of the storybook thing again. I'm not sure. I think, was this the first train we saw in a Disney film? There were no trains in, I know there weren't any trains in Snow White. Definitely weren't trains in Pinocchio, I don't think. Because this is, you know, everybody knows Walt loved trains. And Casey Jr. was featured in...
There may have been like a toy train or something in Pinocchio.
Maybe.
But
Casey Jr. Is featured in another... a short right before this movie came out, which we will discuss later on. But it's amazing that, you know, how Walt, that's one of his big loves. He had the Carolwood or Carolco, I think it was the name of it, like a mini train. Like if you ever watch Silver Spoons, the show. Mm-hmm. That's kind of what Walt had in his backyard. I love the stork drop sequence. Probably one of my favorites with all the different, you know, babies coming in. You see the hippo go into
I love that part.
Into the pool and the elephant and the giraffe with the two parachutes because of the neck. You know, the stork, as we see, only one stork really kind of gets any character to it. And it's Mr. Stork, mm-hmm. and voiced by Sterling Holloway, who is one of my favorite animation voices of all time. Probably, you know, featured in more Disney films than anybody. I mean, we're going to talk about this guy on a lot of our shows. I mean, he's in The Jungle Book, Aristocats, Cinderella, I believe. Yeah, he's, you know, Winnie the Pooh. He does so much, and he's so great. What do you think of Mr. Stork as he came in and did the whole spiel to Mrs. Jumbo?
I don't know. I thought it was really cute. Like, it was different. Like, kind of goes along with what we always tell kids, too. Like, oh, the stork brings the baby. You know, like, kind of fit that whole whimsical little idea of the stork bringing the babies and that it's not just human babies and, you know.
Yeah, and just all the babies at one time.
Yeah, which I was like, oh, man.
Yeah. Now, I know there are some male elephants in there, but we never, like, they never mention Dumbo's father at all. Like, I'm not an elephant expert, so I don't know what the relationship is with elephant babies and their parents. But
I think it may have to do with a couple of things, and maybe I'm reading too much into that. Mm-hmm. One, it was the circus, and so they probably, the way that they got them probably was to just be like, oh, mama baby here, and take them.
Mm-hmm.
Two, I don't know why, but a lot of times in circuses, to speak, I was looking and kind of digging around, and apparently they did use females more often than male elephants. Why? I don't know. And it wasn't, they usually didn't keep the baby elephants for long if they did have babies. So they
probably sold them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like, bulls and stuff like that, where you really only need one male
to take care
of business, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because if you have more than one bull in a herd, mm-hmm. I guess, then it could lead to problems.
It actually can. I grew up on a cattle farm. So
as somebody who knows about that stuff.
You have one male per so many head of mm-hmm. cattle through your herd. So like if you have like several hundred, you might have two, and you usually keep them separate. Mm-hmm. Like, it's very weird. You only put the male out in pasture when you're trying to get your heifers pregnant. So it's very weird. You only need one. And so maybe that's the other thought process behind this, is maybe they do like a studding process, mm-hmm. Where it's like, oh, okay, so we're going to take her and we're going to let her be mated and then we're going to bring her back and we'll pay a fee for, like, I know this is a Disney movie. Like I said, I'm probably overthinking it, but like, if you're thinking ownership in the animal world, which some people hate the idea of like ownership. Mm-hmm. But if you're thinking like business ownership, maybe the whole reason there are no dads, there are no really male elephants, is because of maybe it's a whole, like, they go through a process of purposely only ever keeping the females around, getting them pregnant, selling the babies off. And it's like a, I hate to say it, but kind of like a puppy process.
Puppy
like,
mill, yeah.
You know, in, out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I mean, like again, as with everything, as we go through this time period, you know, you got to look at it through the time period of what it was made. You
know, right. The fathers were less.
The fathers were away at war.
Right.
You know?
It was the mother's job to do everything that is taking place in Dumbo, the lessons that are being taught and things. So that could be another reason, is, you know, in the time period. And the other thing is, during this time period, if you think about it, when we were at war like this, a lot of men were not present. Mm-hmm. They were not there.
Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of like how, you know, yeah. League of Their Own kind of thing. Like, you know, because you do see the elephants setting up the circus, and you do see the elephants you know, performing, and they, you know, they do all this other stuff in the parade and what have you. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if you noticed that Dumbo arrived because he's a little late. When the circus train looked to be around Orlando. I don't know if that was foreshadowing what was going to happen, almost 30 years later.
Right.
So then we get to the, I call them the elephant plastics, like kind of like a reference to Mean Girls.
Yeah.
Because they're kind of like bitchy faces. So it's like
yes.
Because.
Judge, very judgmental.
Making fun of Dumbo, who has a you know, making fun of his birth defect, kind of, so to speak. But, you know, any unconditional love for his mom, you know.
Right.
They were nasty. I was getting mad.
It's sad, but it's unfortunately that's real life. Mm-hmm. That's the way that other mothers sometimes mm-hmm. treat a mother that has a child that is different.
Yeah.
Sometimes they're encompassing and loving and bring you in, like, come into my sisterhood. Let's welcome you and your child, regardless of how they look or their health or whatever it may be. Mm-hmm. 'Cause Dumbo's was physical, but some children it's not physical. And so it's sad. It's really sad that it's, like, truthful, but I think that it was important that they showed that. Like, that was part of the lesson that they were trying to teach here.
Mm-hmm.
Like, from the minute he was born, that even adults behave that way.
Yeah. I mean, nobody's perfect.
Right.
And you kind of, you know, they explore it later on. I mean, I know we're not going to talk about Pixar, but they kind of explore a little bit, like, with Finding Nemo. And mm-hmm. they talk about, you know, Nemo's lucky fin and stuff like that. So, you know, yes, it was a clever storytelling device to you know, hopefully teach and make kids yes. feel better, the ones that don't that feel like, you know, they're not like all the others, but, you know, they really are. Mm-hmm. Also, one thing I had noticed, too, the circus workers putting up tents were faceless. So, because this was a focus on the animals. A lot of times mm-hmm. you don't see the human characters talking directly. They're in silhouette, and they're in other... Right. Other way. So this is definitely, the animals are the stars of this film.
And I think a few times when you do hear the humans talking, like, you see their legs or their torso.
Mm-hmm. You, like, never see their faces. Yeah.
Right. It's more about, like you said, it's the focus on them as, like, the animal community, mm-hmm. And their world and how they're handling everything.
One note I wrote down, hippos in the circus.
Right.
Like, I don't remember there ever being. I know. Now, hippos are cute. Don't get me wrong, but they're vicious.
They are very mean, actually. Mm-hmm. They're usually in zoos, but I've also never seen a hippo at a circus. But who knows?
Yeah,
who
how
knows?
Would one keep one? You know, I mean, it's cool visual. It is. It is very
for
sweet,
sure.
Very sweet scene with them sleeping in the water bubbles and all that stuff. But it kind of made me, like, scratch my head. You know, this was definitely taking place in, like, middle America, or probably, mm-hmm. like, southern, because...
Well, yeah, they traveled. Yeah, they traveled.
Yeah, that, so. And it had the circus parade, which was probably a big deal when that parade uh-huh. came to your town, that every year, every other year. But still, you know, Dumbo's up there, in my opinion, as one of the cutest animated characters of all time.
Oh, for sure.
Sweet. Adorable, just those eyes, that look. A voiceless character as well. He doesn't really speak, and his mom only speaks, I think, like, once when Mr. Stork drops him off, and she sings a song, but she never directly speaks to Dumbo.
So there's a lot. I think there's this. You know, we talked heavily in Fantasia about the lack of talking.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, while yes, there's talking, there's still a huge lack of it here, more than we had in Fantasia, but still a huge lack of, like, depending on those characters that do talk to tell the story, mm-hmm. and more of, like, sitting back and watching, which I think is stronger on you, instead of having someone explain it to you, or maybe there being dialogue. Maybe that is why a lot of people that grew up with this movie have such a strong connection to it, because it allows you to just, like, visually take in and use the music to, you know, fuel your emotions, mm-hmm. which I think is really cool. Less actual dialogue. It kind of, but it plays into the movie. And that may also be the reason why it is 64 minutes long versus, you know, is longer.
Well, it is movies are a visual medium. Mm-hmm. And it's funny, too. One of the rules of screenwriting, big rules, is show, don't tell, which is kind of,
right.
You know, you don't want to, you know, sit there and explain everything, and you don't, you know, you need to be able to.
You're not reading a comic.
Yeah.
You're watching or reading a book where you have to completely visualize everything in your head. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's the opposite. If you're a screenwriter, you want to show. If you're like a novelist, you want to like give them everything.
Yeah, because you have to. You can't leave something out.
Right. Like, mm-hmm. no detail is too small. When you're a novelist, and then when you're a screenwriter, it's like, really, did you need to put that in there? I thought that's pretty much implied. Like, come on, why are you adding that?
Mm-hmm. And now Dumbo starts appearing. You know, he's working around the circus, helping out, and the public starts to get a view of him. And some of the kids start to make fun of him. And one kid reminded me a little bit of Lampwick from Pinocchio.
Well, you know, they did that, yeah. You know, for the years.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because it's cheaper and it's, you know, they probably moved the animator for it or saved the cells. But he was kind of goofy looking, you know, and he still deserved that spanking that Mrs. Jumbo gave him, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Totally.
You were like, yeah, yeah. You were like, yeah, Miss Jumbo. You're like sitting there with your hands up, spanking.
Right.
Kid. But, you know, then Mrs. Jumbo, though, unfortunately, is imprisoned for defending, protecting her baby. You know, and then the elephant, you know, bitches come out and start just talking shit about her, basically, for lack of a better term. How, you know, she should be over there, and he should be in there, I think, as well. I think they were saying, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. And then we have the introduction of Timothy J. Mouse. Great character. Right, go ahead.
Oh, sorry. He, just like a fun little fact. So, Disney actually went, this was a book first, which we mm-hmm. talked about, like Snow White was a story first, things like that. So Dumbo the Flying Elephant was a book first. It was a roll of book. Mm-hmm. Where it had illustrations, and the reader would scroll and turn the little wheel in the book to read the next panel. And so in the book, when they got to the panel with Timothy Q. Mouse, he, in the original book, he actually did not exist. Dumbo's sidekick was a robin, a red robin. And by the end of the book, this robin named Red and Dumbo actually go and sign a film contract and are headed to Hollywood. So in the movie, it's Timothy Q. Mouse, and in the original book, it is actually Red Robin.
Ah.
I thought that was really cool, like, because Timothy J. Mouse is also dressed in red, so I thought that was a little nod to, like, the original.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. So he, to me, was kind of like a New York version of Jiminy Cricket.
I could see that.
You know, I loved his accent. Hey, Dumbo, what are you doing there? Come on. You know, there was some sleep hypnosis in this, the power of suggestion in there.
Yeah.
Kind of getting his ear. And it was also a great visual gag, because that old fable of elephants being afraid of mice, which does come into play mm-hmm. during this movie, but how this innocent, non-judgmental, you know, no preconceived, right, you know, that they're supposed to be afraid of mice, just because this is, you know, becomes his one friend, really, which is really sweet. You know,
because he like makes comment about his ears, but he doesn't actually make fun of him about him, and it's like he just looks at him as the sweet little elephant that he is. Mm-hmm. He doesn't really, yeah.
And then, you know, Timothy goes and wants to get back at them, and he scares them, and during the tries to get them to do this pyramid thing, right? And
he, right.
Yeah, and it does not go well for the elephants. You kind of feel bad a little bit for them, you know, but they are getting nasty to each other. I could just imagine that's how cheerleaders get during a pyramid kind of thing. Yeah, well, you know, they are animals. Well, so they literally tear down the house. Seemed like an ill-fated plan. That was the. It was also the Timothy getting in the ear of the circus, the ringmaster.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I don't know how they could ever envision elephants making that kind of a pyramid. I mean, you used to see them when they still had the circus around and the elephants were there. They would do a little one, nothing to that magnitude. And then they had something called the Solemn Elephant Vow. Where they, you know, you see them all, you see them all like kind of beat up, and they take this vow to be mean to him and not let him in because they blame him for all their injuries and issues and the reason why that the circus, I guess, lost some money. And then,
which is sad. I like, yeah, okay, yeah.
And then we get a scene where I wrote my notes, instant tears.
Yes.
Where he goes to visit his mom and she's in solitary and he sits outside her cage and she sticks her trunk out, reaches down and just rocks him.
Yep.
While singing. And it is like, oh, you don't have a soul if you don't tear up during this part.
This song was nominated for an Academy Award, and it should have been. Like, it didn't win, if I don't remember. Yeah, it was, wait. I don't know that it won.
Mm. All right, well.
Anyway.
We'll get that.
It was nominated, and it should have been, and it's a fantastic song. And no, I can't hear it without, like.
Especially being a, being a mom.
Yeah. It's a heartbreaking tune there.
Let's see. I'm trying to look up, seeing if it was nominated, but it did not win. But it also was listed, though, on AFI's 100 Years, 100 Songs as one of America's greatest film songs.
And I think the movie overall won best score, won an Oscar for best score, is what I wrote down, too. So,
yes, best scoring of a musical picture. And then at the 1947 Cannes Film Festival, it won Best Animated Design.
Yeah. Which was really, what I thought was kind of interesting. So I didn't know this, but talking about like the score of the film, apparently there was a really cute tune that was cut out and I would love to like find it and hear it. But Timothy Mouse, he had an ode to his favorite dairy product. Sing a song of cheese, and they ended up cutting it because they said it really didn't have anything to do with the plot of the movie. And part of the reason is because Walt loved, like, he never hid that Dumbo was like one of his favorites, but he was like, you can a direct quote from him was, you can stretch a story so far and after that it won't hold together. So they ended up cutting the song because they were like, it's cute, people love it, but it really doesn't have anything to do with what we're conveying in the story, so doesn't need to be here. But now I'm like, well, dang, I feel like it needs to be there. Like, I need to know.
Miranda needs to know. Get Miranda that song.
Right?
So anybody out there knows a link, send it to us, and we'll mention you on the next
show. Right? It may be, like, hidden deep down in that vault, but, you know, I'd be curious to know.
Mm-hmm. So after the whole acrobatic elephant stunt debacle, they figure out they want to make Dumbo a clown. And the clowns come in and they're sitting there and they're drinking, they're popping the champagne. And we see them in silhouette, like we mentioned. And I wrote down, drunk clowns shouldn't plan stunts. Just because, you know, there's a thousand.
Clowns should not.
They have the elephant jumping off. They go up to like 1,000 feet. Could you imagine?
Just crazy.
Mm-hmm. And then, so what happens is, though, where the champagne gets left out and knocked over, and one of the bottles goes into a bucket of water, and along comes Dumbo and Timothy, and he's all sad, and Timothy's like, you should have a drink. Not innocently enough. And Dumbo takes a big trunk full of the, we'll say it, the laced water. And then Timothy, you know, and you could see on his face that deal. Something's going on with Dumbo right there. You know, a little underage drinking. And then Timothy falls in there, takes a big swallow, and we get one of the trippiest scenes in any animated movie.
I love it so much.
It is a great scene, but it's also a little freaky. You know, we're talking about the pink elephant on parade.
Mm-hmm.
What do you love about it, Miranda, so much?
Well, you know, one of my favorite all-time, not just Disney films, but like stories, is Alice in Wonderland.
Oh, God.
That's so, like, when you do watch the Disney Alice, it has that very just, like, dreaming, like, dream world, trippy. I don't want to say acid trip because, like, it kind of does have that, but, like, it's just that, like, otherworldly, they use this concept again later, even when we start getting into, like, Princess and the Frog, but, like, so they're going to repeat this. They're going to do it. They do it. If you remember the Heffala song from Winnie the Pooh, mm-hmm. Parts of Alice, you know, when you, in Princess and the Frog, when they're doing their voodoo segments, like, it's a repeated theme that I just think is really cool. Like I said, very otherworldly, kind of like, it's different. It's very in your face, and it's so, like, punchy and flashy that you don't forget it.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I love, this was, like, my favorite part of Dumbo.
Oh, yeah. It's so much fun.
Yeah.
And the animation is great. Leonard Maltin, one of my books I use for research, is the third edition of the Disney films. Written mm-hmm. by Leonard Maltin. Came out a long time ago, actually. I've had this quite some time. Let me look up the copyright. I believe this was 1995, so I've had this book for 25 years. And it's still in pretty good condition. And what he wrote about it, if I can find about it. It is one of the, according to him, the great Leonard Maltin, it is one of the best things ever done at the Disney studio, and to use a much overworked but appropriate phrase, years ahead of its time. It begins when Dumbo takes a trunkful of spiked water, gulps it down, and starts to feel woozy. He hiccups champagne bubbles. Timothy tests out the quote-unquote water and likes it so much he falls in to get the most of it. Then he starts challenging Dumbo to blow various kinds of bubbles through his trunk. One of these turns into a shape of a pink elephant. The elephant blows another elephant out of his trunk, and soon there are four elephants using their trunks to trumpet the herald of song, Pink Elephants on Parade. This begins a surreal fantasy of design, space, color, light, and gags, all to the tune of this minor key march. For example, two elephants are marching along, one big one stepping on the small one in front of him, causing the little one to inflate as he does. Finally, the little one kicks the big one in the rear, causing the big one to split into three giant elephants. Then the little one inflates, takes a pair of gold cymbals, and crashes them down on the three elephants who are squished into a dozen or more tiny ones, who march out of the picture and start climbing up the side of the frame over close-up of Dumbo's face as he watches the march with dreamy-eyed amusement. For a finish, the elephants start to, quote-unquote, melt as the predominantly black background lightens and turns into morning sky with the elephants evolving into clouds. The sequence ends with the camera pans over one prominent tree on the horizon whose leaf formulations give the vaguely rounded impression of being elephants. Fade out. So yes, this is an incredibly animated scene and sequence.
I don't know. It's just, like you said, it's just very visually different and stunning and kind of trippy. And it begins, which you see, and kind of, like I said, all these other movies that are going to come later down the road. And I think that's why I loved it so much. Like the Heffalump scene.
Mm-hmm.
It's like one of my favorite ever. So I think it just plays into, like, you know, everybody has a different like theme or thing that they really, really like. And for me, it was like kind of grabbed that. Like that was what I loved, basically.
Mm-hmm. So from that scene, we kind of wake up, you know, it's kind of like one of those, Dumbo has, like, what did I do last night? kind of feelings, like, you know.
Well, I mean, he's really young, so he would be totally confused by mm-hmm. what happened, what he experienced, what he saw. Like, he would probably assume it was just a dream. Mm-hmm. And I actually read somewhere that there were a couple of versions of the movie, like, you know how they go through and they remaster, that there was one point or one publication where they actually changed it to a dream, where it's like a dream of him, like, flying and instead of these crazy pink elephants.
That wouldn't work.
I'm like, pink elephants, please, but, you know.
I've always, you know, how come when I get drunk, I don't see pink elephants? I've always wanted to see a pink elephant.
Hey, when they accidentally give me codeine, I do see crap like that. There's been purple alligators. There have been giant green spiders. One time there was an Aborigine man, and that is no, like, I'm not making like racist jokes or anything. I'm being serious. Like, there was like an Aborigine man, like, bone piercings and all, playing a drum in the corner. So, yeah, I could imagine that. It's like if you gave me a bunch of codeine. Maybe that's why I like this scene so much.
God, imagine if you had codeine and watched Dumbo.
I will not confirm nor deny that watching scenes such as that, if you were one that ever had a bout with Mary Jane, that it is quite out there and different.
Oh, yeah. I can imagine. I probably watched it in college that way. If I can remember. So we move on to one of the more, I don't know if I would say controversial scenes, but a scene that people seem to have stuff to say negatively about it, where, you know, they wake up and they see some crows. Mm-hmm. And they are black characters. They're not black stereotypes because they don't do any kind of, they don't have any of their dialogue or any of their actions are not considered racist.
Like a stereotype of, or like assume, like, oh, if we make them do this, then people would assume they,
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're not talking Song of the South here, which like we've said, we've kind of danced around. But, you know, since none of us really can get our hands on it, unless you go to, like, one of those fairs, like the Big E, and you get those bootleg copies, you know, we're not going to cover it on here because we can't screen it. You know, and I remember seeing it as a kid. It's just I couldn't give you a fair assessment of it. But anyway, so, but they are archetypes. You know, different shapes, voices, clothes, you know, I love, like I said, this is one of my favorite scenes because I just love the dialogue. It's so snappy. And I seen a, you know, I seen a peanut stand. I seen a rubber band. I seen a horse fly, you know, kind of stuff. And when I see an elephant fly, is a great song.
Well, I mean, because you're not supposed to see an elephant fly. It's like when people say, when pigs fly, like, it's that, it doesn't happen. Like,
Yeah. Now, I mean, you know, you know, I've been drunk, but I've never been that drunk.
No.
You know, and then he gets his magic feather, which is one of the crow's feathers, to, you know, again, though, you know, Dumbo must have, when he was, you know, inebriated, he must have flown somehow. I don't know what caused him to fly.
Right.
And ends up in this tree with these crows, but. You know, so he's given this magic feather, which gives him courage to do his trick where he's got to jump off a platform high up into a pool or a tub, I guess, of water with the clowns. And it turns out he had never needed it. He could fly all along. Timothy just kind of used it to kind of like motivate him, I guess. And then when he does, you know, realize he can fly, he you know, you see Dumbo's confidence, like, it's like a snap, like he's just like, oh, I could do this, and now I'm gonna start some shit, where he gets revenge on the clowns, the ringmaster, the evil elephant, so to speak, with you know, shooting the peanuts at them and everything. What'd you think of Dumbo's triumph here at the end of the movie?
I think it's pretty important to show, like, the lesson of, I think it's like believing in yourself or having just enough people to believe in you. Like, you don't have to have an army believe in you. You just have to have belief in yourself, care for yourself, which I know we are all guilty of. So before I give this big, like, love yourself speech, I understand. I hate myself internally too. I get it. but it is, it's a huge lesson on using what you have as a gift. So like, he didn't see his ears as a gift, but they were a gift. And if you believed in himself, they brought an even bigger gift to him, an even bigger talent, especially, I mean, if you are an animal in the circus and you can, you have something special about you that allows more people to come to your attraction. Yeah. I mean, I would assume you'd be pretty freaking special, you know? So acknowledging that you're special and having just those small people, he had this mouse and a mom that believed in him. Mm-hmm. That's all it took.
Yeah.
But it was like people believing in him and him like stopping and going, you know what? Doesn't matter what any of those mean old ladies say. Like, my mom loves me and my friend loves me and I need to stop and love me. And he did. And then miraculously this thing happened. Like, this time it was that he could fly with the giant huge ears that he was given. But, you know, it applies to a lot of parts of life, whether you're a kid or an adult or what you're going through. But I thought it was pretty fantastic that they did that because, one, it's a Disney movie. We need a happy ending here. So, like, maybe that's where my love of happy endings come in the romance novels I like to read. I need a happy ending.
Yeah. But,
like, so the fact that you get the happy ending and it comes full circle and then you're like, ha-ha, mean ladies, joke's on you. Like, I don't know. It's very, it's like a palate cleanser. It's very nice.
Yeah.
It's like...
Mm-hmm. And so he becomes a media sensation after this performance. Mm-hmm. And you see all these different, you know, the headlines and newspapers, you know, victory. I think they used Dumbo in Victory Through Air Power, which was a not a propaganda film, but a war bond effort. But, you know, and he, and him and his mom are given a private car, you know, a nice stream. Almost like a stream trailer. What that's called? The streamline or
like an Airstream?
Airstream trailer. Mm-hmm. You know, while the sentient train, Casey Jr., travels, and the you know, you see the crows come back, and they you know, wish him luck, and we get our happy ending.
Mm-hmm.
So I love Dumbo, and it's something that I revisit every so often, just because it's just so.
It is really good. We've talked about on other shows, too, that you and I have been part of, like, comfort watching.
Yes.
One of my Disney movies that we'll talk about later heavily, but I'll quit watching for me, is, like, Alice or The Great Mouse Detective.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I have several other friends that they're like, I understand that I am a almost 40-year-old man, but Dumbo is a comfort watch for me because I have this memory tied to it, and... It's not very long, and I can turn it on the background, and it's not, like, violent or, you know, anything like that. It's calming. I know what's going to happen. It's just a comfort watch. So it doesn't matter, like, your gender or your age. Like, it's just calming. And I remember being okay with, like, there were some Disney movies. When Caden was little, for example, I was like, I'm trying to get him to go to sleep. I am not going to turn that one on. But Dumbo, I was like, okay. It's just, I mean... Yeah, there's some, like, crappy things that happen to get to the good part, but, like, overall, because of the lack of dialogue from the human characters, and Sweet Baby Mine is heartbreaking. It's sad, but, like, it's also very calming.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I don't know. It's always one that I have felt was, like, really, really good for that purpose. You know, it's, like, just... It's not super long. It's very calming. It's a comfort watch for a lot of people that grew up with it.
Yeah, it's a quick watch. It flies by. Is. It really does.
It does, for sure.
As opposed to the last movie, which I thought I had to slog to get through when I was
rewatching
it. But no, it's... Yeah, Dumbo is a very quick watch. And, go ahead.
Oh, you know, it's a quick watch, and something I'd like to bring up that you talked heavily about before in Fantasia is that the cells for this movie are extremely valuable because the same thing that they did then, we talked about this, how they used to, like, skate down the hallways on them, and the earth tone paints that were used in the Dumbo color palette are actually where they were prone to flaking.
Mm-hmm.
Really badly anyway. So these are actually among the most valuable of any Disney movie ever made.
Wow.
And I just think, because we talked about in Fantasia, that's like really interesting that they were like, they were really slippery, so they would find it fun to like skate down the hall on them and like never thought that this could be something worth millions later. So due to them like goofing off at work and the type of paint, the color palette they use being like particularly flaky, like if there are any of these, they are preserved in a private collector, or probably in like the family's probably bought them back at this point, but they are super rare and valuable.
Mm-hmm. So we could talk about too some of the like we said, there were things that were planned and canceled. There's actually a sequel planned.
Yes.
In 2001, the 60th anniversary DVD featured a sneak peek of the proposed sequel, Dumbo 2, introducing new character designs and storyboards.
Mm-hmm.
In the story, Dumbo and his circus friends were navigating a large city after being left behind by their traveling circus. It also sought to explain what happened to Dumbo's father, Mr. Jumbo. And Dumbo's circus friends were to include twin bears that were chaotic, Claude and Lolly, a curious zebra, Dot, an older independent hippo named Godfrey, and an adventurous ostrich named Penny. The animals were metaphors for different stages of childhood. It was supposed to be set immediately on the day immediately following the first Dumbo movie, but that was during the time when they were just greenlighting all these direct-to-DVD sequels. And then when John Lasseter came in and took over Walt Disney Animation, being the chief creative officer, he canceled it, which was one of the better things he had done under his tenure over there at the Disney company. Yeah, there were very few of those direct-to-DVD sequels that were actually any good. Return of Jafar was good.
I liked that one. Yeah,
I thought Lion and the King of Thieves was okay. I mean, the best part about that was that Robin Williams had made up with Disney and came back for that, but other than that, it was
Return of Jafar is probably the one that, like, when you're like, oh, it did well.
Mm-hmm.
That one. Yeah,
but all the other ones are really forgettable. They really were money grabs, unfortunately. But so coming out, though, about a little over a year ago, they came out with a live action version of Dumbo with, you know, starring Michael Keaton, directed by Tim Burton. Now, I did see it, and I can speak about that in a moment. But Miranda, you didn't see it.
I didn't.
How come?
And I love pretty much anything Tim Burton. I really do.
Mm-hmm. How come you didn't see it?
Just the preview elicited such a like chest pain for me. Like, I'm not even gonna lie. Like, I cried at the preview. Like, that just like it hurt me so much. And Caden even looked at me with like huge tears in his eyes. It played before something else at the theater, and he's like, "I can't do that one."
Yeah, I did see it because that's. I'm just crazy. And
I have sat down several times and I was like, I'm going to do this. And I am going to do this. But like, I think when there's a movie that's like that you know is going to make you like super vulnerable or super exposed, depending on what is going on in your life, it may not be a good time for you to watch that.
Yeah.
And so I don't know. I feel like anybody that's listened to any podcast I've been on in the past like year and a half, 2 years, knows that, like, we've been through a lot.
Yeah.
And so I have not been mentally on the wavelength to go there.
Yeah.
Like,
you gotta be up for it.
I can't do it.
Movies. I mean, this, I would give it, like thumbs in the middle. Like, I didn't out hate it, but I didn't like it that much. I thought visually, you know, it's Tim Burton. I think he was too dark for it, though. And they made a 2-hour movie based on a 1-hour source material. So they do go over the kind of the Dumbo animated part, but that doesn't take up that much time.
Right. And that's what I was concerned with, too, because it's like the quote from Walt that I gave earlier, like stretching things for the sake of stretching things. And I do understand. There's dialogue this time. There's more about, like, the ringmaster and the circus itself and, and all of these other things.
Michael Keaton basically becomes an evil Walt Disney at one point.
And that's what someone called him. They were like, I can't handle evil Walt Disney.
I was like, one thing I never want ever is an evil Walt Disney.
No, I don't want that.
And that's kind of like the best way to describe how the character is, basically. Because he's all, like, you know, he's all talk and all that. And you know there's something. You know, like this guy is not on the up and up. You know, and then, you know, when he finally reveals his true self, it's like, fuck, that was, like, what happens if Walt Disney was evil? It's like, what would happen, like, if Superman landed in Russia kind of things? You know, kind of thing. What if
I don't want to think about either one of those.
What if Cap really was in Hydra? That was, it's like, that's like the level that an evil Walt Disney is on.
My chest is hurting. Oh, God. It's going to be an anxiety attack.
I don't want to break Miranda tonight. Well, we can talk about something better. I'm talking about the legacy, though, of Dumbo and the merchandising and all the fun stuff. You know, we do have a stuffed Dumbo somewhere in this house. I think it might
We do, too, somewhere. I mean, it no longer has the collar, but it's just the... Because you could take, like, the hat and the collar and stuff off. So ours is just Dumbo.
Yeah.
He's naked, as my mom would say. Mm-hmm. He's naked somewhere.
He ain't got no draws on.
No draws on that boy.
He got no draws.
Right? That, you know, they actually did a live-action puppet series, too.
Oh.
To kind of go into that. I don't know if you remember that. It came out in, like, the 80s.
Not really.
It was called Dumbo Circus. He was kind of... And he spoke. That was what was important. Do you remember... And around the same time, they had, like, a Winnie the Pooh, where they were all, like...
Oh, yeah, I remember
people
that
in costume or puppets and stuff.
Yeah.
And so it was the same thing. It was, like, a 30-minute run show, and he's grown up, and he talks. And he is struck it on his own. He's out big, and he has his own circus.
Ah.
Yeah, and they go from town to town. They pull this little wagon through the air. Dumbo pulls their wagon through the air and performs their greatest little show on Earth, and... None of the characters from the original film appear in the show, obviously, except for Dumbo.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah. And one of the other big things that everybody knows Dumbo for is theme parks.
The theme park, yeah.
Yeah, because the Dumbo ride, you know, everybody who's been to Disney has gone on that ride. Also,
to go on the Dumbo ride. It's also, like going on the magic carpet. You can't not do it.
Well, yeah. Well, a lot of people don't. Look favorably on the magic carpet because they think it's a Dumbo ripoff, and it is. It's the same, you know.
Same concept, same ride.
And
but
so is the Astro Orbiters in Tomorrowland too.
Exactly.
But they're all different, and we'll talk about that.
But I was a kid when Aladdin came out, yes, I saw Dumbo as a little kid, but it obviously we're talking of the years that this was released. This would be something that, like, our grandparents would have seen, our parents would have seen. So Aladdin was on speed. So, like, when we got to Disney, I was like, must ride magic carpet! Yeah. You know, like, I think it plays into the generation, generationally, where do you fall? Like, Caden was, like, Stitch, like, beelined it. Where's my Stitch stuff? Like, I think it, when you go to Disney and you talk about people being mad that this is a ripoff of this, I think it's, where do you fall generationally? Where do you, what is your favorite? What did you identify with the most?
Well, yeah, if you think about it from a theme park design or Imagineer perspective, you know, it doesn't take up a big footprint. Adventureland needed another attraction, and it doesn't take up a lot of space. It's in a good spot too. I mean, you have the. I can't remember the name of the place where you get the Dole Whips there. Actually, just made my first Dole Whip at home last week. Thank you, Disney, for releasing the recipe.
Dole Whips are amazing.
Yes, we're going to make adult Dole Whips next time. And then anyway.
I'm here for it.
But yeah, it's right there. And it has a difference because it has a better scenery to look at while you're on that ride. And also has the spinning camels. So,
But
the classic Dumbo is great. Also, another reason why it's so good is because anybody can go on it. you know.
It is. That's what I was going to say. It is all ages. It's like all encompassing from like 1 to 99, as they say in Disneyland and Disney World. Like, it's for all ages, 1 to 99 or 1 to 100 or whatever it is they say. But like, it really is. Like, you could take your small kids on it. You can take your older kids who may like roll their eyes, but the minute they get up there, they're like, oh, wait, I like this. So
yeah, my aunt who's handicapped, you know, had the best time on it. Yeah. She had her arms up, everything.
Yeah,
you know, and it's so much fun, and it's the kids. It's not scary, you know. If your kid gets a little scared when you start to go up, you know what? Leave it down.
Right. You have the option of making this the same with the carpets. Like, yes, again, I understand it's a complete replica.
Yeah.
But again, it's one of those, like, you can make it, like the teacups. You can make the teacups as crazy as an experience as you want. The same with Dumbo, same with the carpets. You can make them as, like, crazy or as just, like, yay. You know what I mean? Like, you can kind of put into that as much as you want.
Yeah, and then we have the Astro Orbiters, which are really great because you have to take the elevator to go up, and they're higher. And
They are higher.
And you have a great view of Bay Lake, which is right outside the Magic Kingdom, as well as the Contemporary and Bay Lake Towers, which is actually where I stayed last time I was at Disney. And so that, you know, you've got to hit all three. I'm sorry. You can't have any kind of bias. But if you only have time to go on one, you got to go on Dumbo.
My argument to that would be, if you only have time to go to one, pick what would mean the most to you. Is it Dumbo or the carpets?
Yeah, I don't know. Just Dumbo is just so classic.
I know it is. I agree.
It's in every park. It was around the original Dumbo ride. Was around when Walt was around.
It was his favorite. Like, he tried not to have favorites, but Dumbo was one of Walt's absolute favorite things of all of his creations. Obviously, he had a love for Mickey, but we've discussed Mickey and how that actually came to fruition and such too. But and then I guess if you're somebody that, like, you do Disney and Universal, if you go over to Simpsons Land, Kang and Krang is actually identical to that as well. It's the aliens instead, but yeah.
But also, there's at other parks too. There's other attractions. Now, I've only been to Disneyland once in my life. I actually plan to go in 2 years. My Universal trip was canceled for this year, so maybe going back to back trips years. But there is the Casey Jr. Circus Train, which is now, it was 1979. When I went out there, I was almost 7 years old. My sister and I had been sent out there to stay with my aunt and my grandfather, who lived in El Cajon, which is near San Diego. But my parents came out towards the end of summer to bring us home, and we went to SeaWorld, and we did Disneyland. And that's one of the few memories I have of Disneyland, is being in, like, the circus train and being, like, almost like in a cage. Because you sit in there in the circus train, and I think we were in, like, what was supposed to be, like, the lion cage or tiger cage or something like that. That was the car we were in.
Yeah.
So that's the only memory 7-year-old, six and three-quarter Andy remembers of that ride. But it's there, and it's in Disneyland Paris.
Disneyland Paris. We plan to go next year.
Mm-hmm.
So it's the La Petite Train de Cirque.
Oh, cool.
Du Cirque. Because, you know, that's a horrible pronunciation from a Southern American girl. But, it's the Casey Jr. It's a kind of little mini little roller coaster, basically.
When we walk around that park, like them there saying, you know, parlez-vous français, you know.
I actually took French in high school, just enough that I barely passed. But
just know how to ask to go to the bathroom.
I'm already learning Slovak. What do you want from me, Andy?
I want you to know all the languages.
Oh, my God.
Anyway, so, and also in June 2009, Disneyland introduced a flying Dumbo to their nighttime fireworks show, in which the elephant flies around Sleeping Beauty Castle while fireworks synced music goes off to it. And also, Casey Jr. is the second float in the Main Street Electrical Parade and its versions. Yep. It's driven by Goofy, actually, and pulls a drum with the parade logo and Mickey Mouse and Minnie Mouse. And you do see Dumbo in video games and other things. So, you know, I'm glad Dumbo has a lasting legacy because it deserves it. This is this is not it's not a flawless movie, but it is a it doesn't have a lot of negatives to it at all.
I would agree with that.
Mm-hmm. So if you haven't seen it in a while, please go on Disney Plus. If you have little kids that haven't seen it yet, you know, sit down for a movie night, make some popcorn, you know, and have a fun time. And, you know, you'll probably have to watch it over and over again, so we apologize for that.
What else are you going
to
do right now?
Yeah, that's true. You know, catch up on all your films. So, that's going to, you know, kind of wrap up. You have any other final thoughts on Dumbo and Miranda?
No.
No? Yeah.
I had something profound to say, but...
I wonder, this podcast might actually be longer than the movie.
It might be. It might be. But we've also talked about the rides and other things that have come from Dumbo. So that would make sense.
Mm-hmm. All right. So that being said, we'll kind of put a bow on this episode. Next episode will be Bambi.
Yeah.
Hopefully Chad will be back for that episode. I mean, it is hard. He's got a whole podcast feed over there now. We're going to do plugs. So let's just mention Chad. He's over on the North-South Connection. That's the feed brought to you by him, JT Rosero, and Aaron George, featuring all kinds of shows, mostly wrestling. You know, you have Wrestling Warzone. You have No Holds Barred, Carolina Dreamin', The Year That Was, and lots of other great shows. Another great associate feed of Air Replacement Nation, The Jenny Position, featuring all kinds of great shows. The Journey to Infinity, Talk and Pop, is telling stories, Bianca's First Time, and another show, Geek and Sassy.
Geek and Sassy.
Miranda, what's going on on Geek and Sassy lately?
Geek and Sassy, we did a quarantine version of Read Streams and Downloads, which is a segment that we do quite often, but we did our quarantine version, so it's a little bit longer.
Okay.
We also have, we try to keep this show here kind of family friendly, but the Read Streams and Downloads is sort of our newest episode that will be coming out soon is a Tingle Tales NSFW. Do not listen.
I gotta not drink children. When you start doing this.
I make sure I put that in there, like
yes, disclaimer.
I'm that person that'll be like trigger warning.
What, this is the girl that was talking about Disney and cartoons, or what's she talking about now?
Right. And so I actually think I said that on there. I was like, look, I just, like, before we get started, NSFW, this is not, so when we were doing a rundown of, like, what we do, like we're doing now on that show, I was like, if you listen to this and you're like, that girl, like, talked about Disney, I can't let my kids listen to that. Actually, you can, is what I said. But yeah, so this new episode is not for children. At all.
Oh,
in any
boy.
Fashion. It's not the normal just F-bombs that Miranda tends to drop. But yeah, we have a lot of fun with those two because those books are so, like, absurd and out there and, like, the weirdest thing I've ever come across. But the man can actually write. So it's just this strange, strange world that we took a dive into. And it went over well, so we're going to continue to do the Tingle Tales on occasion here and there.
Sounds like fun.
Yep. And, like, new stuff in the works with our friend from across the pond. Mm-hmm. So
over here on the pop feed.
Yeah, I'll have a new show. I just, like, totally forgot how to talk for a second. I was like, I'll have a new...
I'm like, what happened to Miranda?
Miranda is broken. Andy gave her an anxiety attack with those what ifs, and now she is broken. So, yeah, new stuff coming to the pop feed. Mm-hmm. So just kind of, like, watch out. All of the feeds here that we work together with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So any of the... If there's something... that you're looking for, if you check one of the three feeds, you are, well, four technically, because Place to Be Nation has pop and wrestling. Mm-hmm. Chad has North South. Jenny has Jenny Position. There's going to be something for you on one of them. And like, I can guarantee it.
Plus, there are shows in the works. You know,
There are new shows in the works, too. Mm-hmm.
You know, we kind of had a little change over here on the feed, so we have ideas out there. We're actually going to, you know, be reaching out, so stay tuned to our social medias, because there could be some announcements being made. But also check out the wrestling feed. Lots of great shows, Place to Be Podcast, Main Event, Row 1 Seat 1, Scott with his TNA, NWA show, whatever it's called. Mm-hmm. Sorry, Scott. I didn't mean to say it like that. But also, I have two shows over there on the wrestling feed. I do a version of one of my shows, Great Debate. There should be a new one coming within the next couple of weeks, as well as The Evolution. The second episode is up. That is, we talked about Macho Man Randy Savage, and that was with JT Rosero. The next episode is going to feature The Godfather, Nate Milton.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. I'm very excited, and, you know, he's a WCW guy, so that's my little tease right there. It's going to be somebody who is a longtime WCW wrestler. And over here on the Pop feed, lots of shows. Laughing Theater. The last couple episodes, we had one of our specials with a group watch with the debut of James Grunberg and Eric Eels, along with Sean Kidd. We watched the 2000 wrestling movie, Ready to Rumble. It was quite the viewing experience. And then on the last two episodes of Laughing Theater Proper, J.R. Sunil D'Amato came by, and we watched Animal House, the great thing. And on the last episode, Logan Croslin came by, and we watch Ace Ventura, Pet Detective. So much fun. On the next episode, Todd Weber returns to Laughing Theater, and we're going to be watching Dazed and Confused. So I'm really looking forward to that. As well as in July, it will be the 35th anniversary of the original Back to the Future. So I have Lee Elias from Geeks Who Like Sports coming by, and we're going to watch Back to the Future, and Lee is probably the biggest Back to the Future fan of anybody I know. So I'm really looking forward to hearing what he has to say and all the knowledge drops we're going to get during that episode. Also,
Knowledge bombs.
Don't forget, we also have another episode of Great Debate coming soon. The latest episode of Year in Pop 1982 is currently out. 1983 should be coming within the next few weeks to a month. So lots of stuff coming. Lots in the works. So stay tuned for all of that. What's going on?
We have a tournament going on.
Oh, shit. I totally forgot. Sorry, kids.
How did you forget? So, junk food tournament that is giving Miranda anxiety every time she sees the matchups. It's like, I can't believe that I actually got into a legit debate with explaining to someone the difference in pretzel rods and pretzel sticks. But.
I saw that.
I'm really good at this. Somebody's like, oh, what's the difference in this and this?
I think there's
you know what?
There's
Miranda
a big,
will drop that knowledge.
I think there's a big divide in the North-South kind of thing because, you know, Northerners, I mean, Hostess are everywhere. So y'all have Twinkies, y'all have cupcakes everywhere.
But we do, but we love Little Debbie more. I'm just going to be honest with you. Little Debbie is our jam.
Yeah. I mean, I've been sampling Little Debbie products a lot lately. I did buy zebra cakes.
Oh, zebra cakes.
I didn't. Ellen and I tried them, and Ellen was like, yeah, it's kind of like a vanilla cupcake. Yeah, what's nothing special?
Ellen! You were my friend.
I said the same thing for the most part. I mean, I have the oatmeal cream pies. Those are good. I bought Jessica they're not in the tournament, but I bought Jessica the strawberry rolls, jelly rolls, or whatever those things are called. She's going to try them. I tried Nutty Buddies or Nutty, whatever those things are. Oh,
Nutty Buddies.
I am cursing out Tim Capel in a good way because he was the one that was chatting about it earlier this week. So
Nutty Buddies are fantastic.
Yes. So you see, but all up here in the North, we have Drakes quite often, which are coffee cakes and yodels and all that fun stuff.
Yeah, we don't really have Drakes here. Mm-hmm. So yeah, like voting today, like I will vote live. So Hostess Snowballs versus Ho Ho's. Well, I prefer a Little Debbie Swiss roll, so I'm gonna go for the Ho Ho.
Well, and just get those snowballs out. Get them out. Get that cookie.
Oh my god, they gross me out. They really do. I'm sorry. It's like the texture. It's like
You sound like Woody Harrelson in Zombieland.
Yes, like I can't do it. And then the Drake's yodels, I'm understanding they would be similar to a Swiss roll.
They are.
Paired against a funnel cake. And my favorite thing is a funnel cake, so the yodels ain't making it for me today. And then you get ringdings against churros. I mean, who's not going to pick a churro?
I pick ringdings. I like churros, but you know what, though? Here's the thing about churros. You can have a bad churro.
You can have a bad churro.
You ain't having no bad ringdings. I'm sorry. When a push comes to shove, it's like if somebody puts something in front of me, I trust a ringding. I don't always trust a churro.
I don't know. It's like a ringding wants to be a Swiss roll, but like it didn't happen and it didn't quite make it to snowball because like who the hell wants to be a snowball?
Well, a ringding's like a ho-ho, I think. You know, and but here's the thing too, is that now there's churro varieties. You know, it's the Six Flags that we go to, Great Adventure in New Jersey, they have Oreo churros now.
Interesting.
And I'm like, I've had it. You know, if a churro sits out too long, it ain't good. I actually had real churros once in Venezuela.
No, you can't save them. Like, if you're like, oh, I don't really want this right now, I'll wrap it up. They're not for saving and reheating.
Same thing with funnel cake.
No, yeah, well.
You just get a greasy paper plate the next day. That's what you got.
Pretty much. No, you have to take it off. I've learned how to do it. You got to take it off the paper plate. You wrap it in paper towel, and you put it in a Ziploc bag.
You know, so here's the thing. So we have memberships to Six Flags. So, and we have the meal plan. So what that means is whenever me and my kids go to Six Flags, we get lunch, dinner, and a snack as part of,
right.
And I don't have to pay a dime for it. It's part of our plan that we have. We get every year for Christmas from my aunt. Love you, Aunt Betty. So, there are so many times. So what happens is, though, we go to one in Massachusetts. That's an hour and a half drive home, no matter what. But the one in New Jersey, my aunts live 10 minutes from there. So quite often what we'll do is, you know, well, we will have had our lunch. We'll have our dinner. And then, like, it's like, you know, we have these snacks, but am I hungry? Am I not? You know, we don't want it to go to waste. So what we do is we go and we get them and we take them to go. So quite often it will include a funnel cake, a churro, sometimes a pretzel, a hot pretzel. You know, sometimes Dylan wants popcorn. I always try to poo-poo that, but you know, what are you going to do? You know, we don't really get a sundae. They have funnel cake sundaes now, which are not part of, you know, it's not a snack credit, so I don't even pay an extra for that. So we quite often bring them home. And you know what it's like to carry a funnel cake and a churro and stuff out of a theme park all the way to your car?
Yes, I do.
And not get powdered sugar everywhere and then get back to the house and then just keep staring at that thing for the rest of the night and just like, I ain't eating it now. I can't. Okay. All right. So, Miranda, what's the fourth matchup for today that you didn't do yet?
Let me see. What did I not do yet?
You only said three.
So I did snowballs and ho-hos, yodels and funnel cake, ringdings and churros. Oh, the Twinkie against the oatmeal cream pie. And I have a deep-seated hatred for Twinkies. So it's the oatmeal cream pie.
Twinkies are the number one seed, though. And that,
I, you know, everybody I talk to is like, oh, you're right, they're disgusting. But yet somehow they still fly off the shelves and people are voting for them like crazy. So some of you people will be telling me they disgust and be lying. You lying.
Twinkies
and
have a slim
lead. I'll stay here.
I mean, by the time this goes up, Twinkies, it'll be over. But I mean, you know, for me, I don't. Twinkies is something like I'll have like once every couple of years.
No, I won't even have them that often. I don't like them.
Have you ever had a deep fried Twinkie?
I did because out of curiosity, I hate to say it, but the Southerner me was like, well, if you deep fried, it's already better. So we went to this fair where I was like, I'm going to get my funnel cake. And my friend was like, oh, but they have deep fried Twinkies. And I was like, yeah, but funnel cake. And I'm like, come on, I know I love funnel cake. And she's like, deep fried Twinkie, just try it. And I was like, I don't like Twinkies. And she's like, yeah, but it's deep fried. And I'm like, okay, so I'll get the deep fried Twinkie. Nope. Frying it didn't make it better. It didn't make it better. That chalky middle, it just was like chalky and hot. Like it didn't make
it. It just burned me, and then I got more. Man.
Oh, like blah blah. Now deep fried Oreos.
Oh, those are good. Deep fried peanut butter cups. You know what I had? I had the deep fried
PB&J. And I know this sounds really bad, and this will just like clog your arteries hearing about it, mm-hmm. but deep fried butter.
Yes, Ellen loves that. We go to the big, you go up to the stand, right? And they give you a warning. Do not bite into this. You will burn your face. You need to and it squirts all over the fucking place.
Yeah. And your chest, like you're chewing it and your chest is hurting and you're like, oh, this is what a heart attack feels like. And so you usually share it with someone. I recommend you share it. It's not for like eating the whole thing, especially if you're going to an event where you also are going to like get a slush and a pretzel
We go to Big E, which is like the State Fair for all
of New
England.
Is that the thing you guys sent me pictures
of? Yes. Yes.
Yes.
And that's like, when we went 2 years ago for my first time, that was one of the things we tried. And now that's like Ellen's on her must-do list. I need my deep fried butter. You know, just like
the deep fried butter and the baked potato. Potato. That's mm-hmm. what it was. Potato with the deep fried butter. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes. The salmon on the stick is also a big, big hit. But yes, deep fried butter. Deep fry. So Miranda, though, we're going to go through tomorrow's matchups real quick.
Oh.
Since we're on a roll tonight.
I get to first look. Okay.
We're done talking about Dumbo. So if y'all want to shut off the podcast now, we're cool.
Yeah, if you don't no longer listen to us, but we're giving you an added bonus mm-hmm. of, what we do here at Placement Nation.
Or as we would say, close the kids' ears, fat shittery. So these are the matchups going up on the 27th. It's Wednesday.
Okay.
So in the snack foods region, the number 2 seed Hostess chocolate cupcakes, which one of my favorites growing up, going up against number 15, the Little Debbie Cosmic Brownies.
Oh, Cosmic Brownie.
See, now this is a North and South thing. Because I don't know anybody up here that likes cosmic brownies. Everybody thinks they taste fake. Like, you know.
And I think that about the little Hostess cake.
Those are so good. Because, you know, you had the different schools of thought. Like, do you bite into it or do you peel off the frosted chocolate part and eat that separately? It's a divide.
See, that's how the cosmic brownie works, too. Some people actually pick off the little, like, chocolate pieces. Because those mm-hmm. little sprinkle looking things, they're actually like chocolate bites mm-hmm. and then you've got the layer of the thick like chocolate icing and then you have this like dense like if somebody were making brownies you'd be like you just screwed these brownies up, but like it's like this dense brownie but it's like super moist and it's so much chocolate and sugar that your teeth hurt while you're eating it but you can't stop.
Somebody threw one at you, you're getting hurt. How dense it is.
Like fantastic.
All right, so we got number 10, Drake's Coffee Cakes, going up against number 7, Cracker Jacks.
Cracker Jacks actually physically hurt my teeth. Like, they really do. Like, I can't. It's hard. And honestly, it's stale a lot of times. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to go with a coffee cake because, well, I've never had Drake's. We have a brand here that, like, I love. So it's like that coffee crumb cake mm-hmm. with, like, the, like, little crystallized sugar crumb pieces on the top.
I'm
here for that.
It's tough for me, but I'm gonna probably go coffee cakes in the end. Here we go. Little Debbie Swiss rolls, number 6, going up against number 22, Hostess Ding Dongs.
Well, Swiss roll all day long.
Yeah, I'll probably go Swiss rolls because I've had them.
I love Swiss rolls. Like, I love them so much.
And then we got number 14, Hostess Fruit Pies, the apple one. Versus number 3, Rice Krispie Treats.
Rice Krispie Treats.
Yeah, you gotta go Rice Krispie Treats.
I do love those little fruit. I used to love those little fruit pies. Mm-hmm. Growing up, and you can't get them for this anymore, but I remember growing up, you could get them for 35 cents a mm-hmm. piece.
Yeah.
And sometimes they'd be like 5 for a dollar. I did like them, and I would warm them, so you wrap them in a paper towel, and you put it in the microwave for, it's like less than 30 seconds, or you will burn the roof of your mouth off.
And they have all the different varieties. You have the cherry, the blueberry, there was the lemon. There was
the apple was my favorite.
Remember when chocolate one came out? That was a game changer.
Yeah, the chocolate one was pretty good. And you could get them in vending machines too, so that was really cool. But if we're talking like classic, like give me memories, even though I just explained all of that to you, I would go with Rice Krispies all day long.
So don't forget, go like the Facebook page for the Greatest Jerk Food Tournament, and you can vote in all these matchups, as well as we have a group there. Don't forget, check out all the Facebook pages for all of our shows, Geek and Sassy. Check out Mom's a Nerd, which is one of Miranda's pages. Check out Great Debate, Year in Pop. What else do we have? Laughing Theater, all have pages. Mm-hmm. And just check us out, PlaceMediation.com. All kinds of articles, all the podcasts are featured there. So just keep checking out, and we'll keep, cranking out stuff for you guys. So I want to thank Miranda Berthold for getting together with me, as usual. And shout out to Chad Campbell. Hopefully he will be here next month when we talk about Bambi. So that's it for this episode of Pop Goes the Classics Disney, and we'll talk to you next time. See ya.